Hi, I'm Josh, and look, I enjoyed The Devil's Bath, but I just think it's the weak link in the trilogy because The Devil's Bed really did a job building the world, and then The Devil's Beyond just really took the story to its logical conclusion and gave all the characters a satisfactory arc.
Yep. All right.
The Devil's Breezeway was just kind of inconsequential.
The Devil's Foyer. hey,
and
I'm
you
Matt.
Were born in the Devil's Foyer.
nice. I'm Matt, and oh boy. Sorry, my rhythm's all thrown off. I forgot to buy candy before podcasting for the first time in a long time, and since I have only myself to blame, I think I can safely say I can also blame men.
Yeah. That checks out. That works. Because there's so much, you know, everything in the world, everything all at once. I was reminded that, like, when I was a kid, when you used to go to summer camp, and then I used to be a camp counselor. And one of the things in Prescott, as Josh can attest, is that there are like a gazillion, every nook and cranny where you turn a light, there's like a gazillion daddy long legs. And like they're just like piles of them. And but what I love about Daddy Long Legs is that they do this little bop where they like do this little like bum 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 bum. And so like why that's the thing, I can't remember somebody's name 2 minutes after I meet them, but I can picture what it looks like for a Daddy Long Leg to bop across a bathroom wall in the middle of a national forest 30 years ago.
Huh. And now that's in our heads too. Hooray.
Yeah, there you go. But they do this little bop. They do this little rhythmy boppy thing. It's like, it's just, you know, it's adorable is what that is.
And if you could please tune in next week for our Bluegrass Ramones tribute band, Grasshopper Bop. And this is Harsha Hot Dog. So look, we had this short, and it was called Killing Eric, or Assassinando Eric, perhaps.
Nice.
And I don't understand this short, and someone's got to help me. I don't understand any of the people were related to each other or what the tone was. So my theory is that this short is about a man and a woman who are divorced or divorcing, living separately. But they have like a high maintenance kid named Daniel, and wife comes home to find husband's friend, protege, something standing there and being like a butler.
He refers to him as his new temporary assistant or something.
Yeah. Like eager young man. And then he just keeps remarking about how young he looks even as he's dying. And okay. And then there's a monster upstairs that is named Eric and kind of looks like Gollum. And like mom says some stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense. And dad says some stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense. And they end up dumping the monster in the rando dude's granddaughter's bedroom. So it'll be her monster. But it turns out there's another monster under the bed who then just wants to like have sex with Eric.
Yeah.
I know I sound a little frantic, but rest assured that I'm just a little frantic. I couldn't get...
No, I
feel like there is a low thrum of comedy down there somewhere. Like
there sure is. That,
like if it's... Because case in point for tone, there's this like three-step process that they're using to manage Daniel, and it's like subjugation and psychoanalysis are two of the things. And like dad is clearly wacky dad, but it's just like, as I said before, so dry it makes a Popeye's biscuit look like Cardi B's pussy. And I could not figure out was Daniel normal or was he not normal? When you just don't have any anchors, you just kind of end up going blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, no, I have not disliked the short like in a while. Like this is, I just like, because you could see the shape of what they're trying, like the thing with the dad guy, he's like, I got to respond to some emails. I gotta return this phone call. Well, I'll just be a minute. I have to do this business thing. I have to do business, worky business. And you're just like, by the ninth time that the guy says that, and of course for 2 minutes, like I don't. Then mom is like weirdly, broadly acting. Kid doesn't make a lick of sense. And then like weird monster guy, old guy, which they keep describing as being young. That doesn't make a damn bit of sense. And so, like, as it's going along, well, maybe it'll be at some point, it'll be like, bloop, and then, it, like, you pop back into reality, and it's like, oh, this is why these guys are all acting like raccoons who have been granted a wish of being human for an afternoon. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, they never bloop back into reality to explain what the fuck's going on in this thing. So, like, and the way I said at the end, and I'm not proud of this necessarily, but my first reaction, the credits started rolling, was like, I just said out loud, I was like, well, the best thing about the short is that it ended. Hmm. Oh. I mean, I felt bad about that, but I don't 100% feel bad because he's,
You were also in an empty room.
So you don't. Oh, no, I delivered to the joint session, of the UN.
Oh, that's different. And probably you would have had more trouble following the short because it was on the big old screen.
That's true.
And hear all the people translating.
Yeah, just having the having the overdubbing in Swahili didn't help.
So that guitarist did his overdubbing in Swahili.
So how did you find this thing, Matthew? That's what I want to know.
This was just like I had to frantically click on something and was like, this one. It looks like it's got like it's.
I was wondering. Yeah,
this was just fully random. I think I'd said that last week. It's like I don't know. This is just this one. So yeah, this was rolling ye old dice, which we used to do more. And I've since not done that.
And now we sucks. Don't.
But the closest I could get to wrapping my brain around this, because that's why I was like, damn it, earlier, because I was like, oh, you came with the exact question I was going to have, which is, what is this supposed to mean? The closest I could get was that this was like a clumsier version of the, was it Possession, the film with Sam Neill? That's like about the divorce, but is all done through like metaphor. And so, yeah, that was sort of, I guess, as you guys intimated, like that was sort of the closest feel I could get on this, which is you have the kid setting up things to instigate arguments, you know, pretending to drink scotch and he's got the little blood on him. He's carrying the thing. And like, so he's clearly like aware that he's messing with things. And so it's like, okay, is this the kid who's trying to, he's acting out because he doesn't like the situation he's in because mom and dad aren't getting along. Dad is this bizarre version of the workaholic, not present father. Mom is the one that's trying to do all the work, you know, around the house as well as a job, it seems, as well as manage the seemingly full-time job of trying to diagnose the kid because they can't see the forest for the trees with their acrimony being the problem. Then there's also a monster, though.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck. And it, like, every time I thought I had an idea, like, some other aspect broke it apart. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, fuck. So it's as near as I can tell, this is probably broadly metaphorical for something that wasn't made clear enough for me to get it. But I do think there's, like, this comedy undertone that does play. There's a couple times when they react with their weirdness in a way that I thought was, like, kind of funny. But it becomes the thinnest of broth to have for dinner because there's just not enough there to grab onto.
The fact that I could watch that whole thing and still not know why old guy was there.
Yeah.
Was kind of amazing. I thought at some point they would say, you know, he's my butler. He's my lover. He's my
or you'd husband. Find out they do this every day with a new person or something.
Yeah. Some explanation for.
Yeah.
Some aspect of the way that they were, because like, and then got the end of it, and the comment was like, "What is that? I don't understand." But and then he's like, and he stops, he interrupts himself. He's like, "Why does this shirt say Daniel?"
Right, exactly. But it's like, you know, that's a careful choice to like mean something. Like, is it?
Well, that's what I mean. Like,
and maybe that's it. Maybe this is just this weird Dadaist art, and the whole, you know, it's what we're talking about, it, aren't we? Like, fuck. I don't know. It's just
And that might very well be the thing, but it's just I just kind of go like, you know, fine if that's what you're going to do, like then that's okay. But like, but if that's what the plan is, then you gotta do it though. Like you gotta commit in a way that brings something to the table. Like even things that I've not liked or that have been very uncomfortable to watch, like was it that one Chilean one or the Argentine one, the I think it's Chilean one or the or Argentine one, the Untamed, this Lovecraftian fucking nightmare of a thing. But it's like 80% of just like this like very unpleasant family drama, sad things. Then just some Lovecraftian nonsense. And it's like, so in that particular instance, it's sort of like, all right, well, I mean, you're going for nonsensical, but as it goes along, you do relate it back to sensical in a way that kind of like goes, okay, well, I see now where these things fit together and can explain this, it can explain this, and this kind of justifies this. And like, this just sort of like, I mean, it's a short, sure, okay, fine, you know, whatever. But it's just like at a certain point, like if that's your plan, then you gotta have some anchoring something. And there's none. So like maybe the people that made it or wrote it or were involved in it, like it all makes sense to them, but like that's not acceptable.
It just bothers me a little that I can't tell whether this is failing to tell a story because of like, you know, amateurish storytelling skills, or being obtuse or hitting a vibe that I'm just not catching at all. And that's why it doesn't make sense.
I can't tell if it's worth the effort to figure out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if somebody was trying to make something that had a very clear interpretation and failed, right? I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm sure they're very nice people.
I'm befuddled. It looks good. This is not pretty. Like it's put together pretty well. It's just, there's not enough there for me to grasp. So yeah, I'm a pass on this one.
Wait, are we doing smash or pass now for,
sure. Why not? I think that's, so Hulk smash or John Elway
multi-pass.
Yeah. Two Anybody things. Else I know nothing about.
And Wolverine this week.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So we all know what smash debating is.
Yes, we do.
Goddamn. All right.
In the lobby.
Well then let's stroke our way into talking about long legs.
Might
we
as well.
Don't talk about long legs. No. Yes we do. Oh. Long legs, las piernas largas.
Cool.
this as I've said every time we've talked about this movie, this is a movie by Oz Perkins, and the last movie from him that I saw made me angry at how much of a pretentious waste of time it was for me. The one that he directed but did not write was somewhat more on my wavelength, but yeah, so I wasn't hoping for much. I was kind of expecting something that was very pretentious and insufferable. And really though, what I got was, not to be glib or to be mean to anybody who enjoyed it, but he found a new way to suck at making movies. Because it wasn't,
how could anybody take that the wrong way?
Right.
It wasn't. No, you can't take it the wrong way. You'll be insulted by the right way too.
Fair enough.
You can't take it the wrong
way. It's the Kobayashi Maru of statements.
But and that's the ball game. Is,
instead of this being that super artistic art with a capital A, maybe you're too dumb to understand what I'm doing here, but I certainly am not going to cut away from this single frame for 10 fucking minutes. That kind of thing, it wasn't that. It was just like a 70s fetish thriller sort of James Wan-ish thing. Like a just middle of the lane bowling ball, but one that's square. So you just throw it and it hits the middle of the lane and just goes thud. All of which to say, there are small parts of this that I really like in about the first 15 minutes. And once it stops being Silence of the Lambs and decides to be a Conjuring movie and then doesn't really get to that bit, then I just couldn't, man. Like, I am sorry. Like, Nick Cage is fantastic. His character is actually super great, and he vanishes in there in a way that I haven't seen him do in a long time. Like, he would kick ass. And, you know, Micah Monroe rules.
I think
she's
great.
All she got to do was walk around going, no, every fucking scene. She's walking. She's walking. And she's going, I just wonder if the director had a secret furry fetish and he was imagining her in a dog suit. Anyway, I had trouble, guys. I wanted this to be, I had no expectation actually that it was going to, that I was going to like it. Right. But I was going to try. And it just, everything after the super creepy scene where she gets the letter in her room, just everything after that just falls the fuck apart. Because in so many ways, just to begin with, the whole thing is the killer is sending these letters that have a code in them, like cryptic letters. And the whole ad campaign for this movie is about those letters. And then the FBI hasn't been able to break this code in 30 years. And then Micah Monroe gets one of the letters and it gives her three letters as a decode. And the code is a 1-for-1 alphabet substitution.
Yeah, it's just like a rot 13.
Which, no, it's just like A equals squid, B equals, cookie. I didn't pay much attention to Sesame Street.
It's just wingdings, yeah.
So she immediately breaks the code. And the FBI is like, oh my God, how did you do that? And I was like, that's what they put on kids' menus at restaurants. That's where you're hitting me with this thing. And then none of the things that were in the messages mattered. And or were worth knowing. And because then we shift into the, is it Satan kind of thing? But I read a quick interview with Oz Perkins, and he said he wanted you to think that it was just going to be Silence of the Lambs, and that would be your kind of entryway into this movie, and then it would get weirder and weirder and weirder on you. And like, okay, so this was intentional. This movie that I was enjoying watching, he was trying to suck me into this next phase wherein the... like Long Legs is dead, but it's Satan in the metal ball inside the doll's head, which is a lot to dump on a dude in the last third of a movie. And I just struggle. And she fires all the shots at the people. She like wastes enough time to get Blair Underwood killed, and that's not okay. She just stands there like a moron. She's an FBI agent. And then she fires all the gunshots at him after he's come back in, and then she goes to shoot the doll and the fucking gun clicks like the doll is the hero in an action movie. And then she takes the girl and they walk out, and we don't know what any of that means in this context, right? Like, did she avert the apocalypse or cause the apocalypse or yeah. And I realize that I'm still talking and I've been doing it for a while, but really confused me. And it was, and because of that, it was so very dull. There was not a moment where I felt tension after that first encounter where he sneaks into her house. So just, and without the atmosphere of tension, all you have is just endless heavy breathing. You know, trying to, yeah, I don't know. It's like a dude trying to get hard in a porno where it just sits there stroking, thinking that it's accomplishing something, and I'm not erect. And this has been a tone poem about my experience with Long Legs. I'm sorry. Let me refer to my notes to make sure I didn't leave anything out. Oh yeah, Micah Monroe's character is psychic.
Oh yeah, sure okay. Is. Kind of.
Does that matter? Nope. Is Micah coded autistic? Yeah. Why? Or is it just that the movie has clinical depression? Right, but I think the big thing is in the beginning, there's no ticking clock. Like there's no live victim they're trying to save. It's just like, hey, you're on this case now. And I don't know. Oh, also the central casting morgue guy. He didn't have a sandwich, but that was about it. And the scene where she goes and meets the girl in the institution and she talks like in the universe of Misery, there is another Stephen King, and that Stephen King was writing dialogue for Kathy Bates. It was like, only Zwees be watching you. I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, so I understand that if you were to catch the vibe of this movie, that you would have a very tense and enjoyable time, is what sane people have told me. So please, never mind my previous 15 minutes. And Matt and Charlie, you guys can talk about it.
Well, so like I was thinking about this in relation to, and this will make sense, I promise. Where I was thinking about it in relation to Mandy and how, like a lot of people, when just Mandy like came out,
and Dave without taking,
sanctuary. The where like there was this instant memification of all the things from the Cheddar Goblin to the shot of Nick Cage in the car and. You know, whatever, or like the whiskey drinking thing in the bathroom, or whatever, and like it's almost instantaneously, people just like glam onto this thing, and like all this iconic, this, that, whatever, and it's sort of like, but it's like, yeah, but the movie itself is just bereft of meaning, point, direction, or plot, or characters, or any of it. Like, it's some great visuals, yeah, absolutely, I'll agree with that, but it's like it's not a movie so much as a moving painting, and that's whatever. And it's like, and that one I really struggled with, because I get walking out and going like, what in the hell, because it just seems so directionless and whatever. Whereas like one of the things I liked about this one, actually, Joshua, it's kind of the different side of what you were saying, which is that like, because I watch a fair bit of police procedurals, either for TV shows or like kind of thriller movies from either here or other places. And, you know, kind of like you got a cop on the case, you got a young cop, a grizzled cop, you got a thing, and I'll watch it. I'm interested. Like, I'll go check that out. And so, what I liked about this was that there wasn't that mechanism. Of like it's a race against time. Like, oh, don't tell me the rules. I can't follow by the rules. Like, oh, you're suspended. You're flying like a lone wolf. Like, oh, fuck's sake. I've seen it 500 times. Oh. You know, and like, so that was one of the reasons why I liked this, was that it didn't have that mechanism to where it was sort of, it was more along the lines of just like, well, this is sort of this thing that happens, like the cycles of the moon. Like, oh, at a certain point, this thing will happen, and then somebody else will go missing. That was, and it was like almost that thing of like straining the reality of it, like, yeah, in this area, this is how many people have gone missing over this amount of time, whatever. I was like, okay. I was like, that's one thing Kevin and I are talking about on the way home. It's just sort of like, in reality, if there's a region where this many children were going missing over this amount of time, whatever else, like, there would be hundreds of FBI agents that live there. Because it's sort of like, this is not something that sort of occurs. I mean, unless it's a black neighborhood, but besides that, like, or a reservation, then, you know, like, all bets are off. But if it's white people, there's no fucking way. And it's just sort of like, so like, that kind of strains a little bit, but makes it seem more. And I was wondering about this, and it's a crazy, silly thought, but like, one thing I thought that I had is like, you know how the entity in this can like mess with your perception or whatever. I was thinking. Mm-hmm. That part of the thing with this is that like it went a little too deep on Nicolas Cage's character, that kind of just completely tweaked him. But like in general, it can just kind of mess with you, where it's just thinking of Dogma. You know, like, what are you gonna do? Hit me with that fish. That kind of thing, where it's you know, it's like all of a sudden your reality is kind of monkeyed with. And so I was thinking that might be, that's kind of part of this thing of like, where like, oh, nobody got the cipher or whatever else. Like, oh, there's like a pallor over the cipher. So like, no matter how long you're going to look at it, you're just not going to get it. The same way as like, you know, like a spell that makes somebody that their face is not recognizable. Like, you're looking right at them. How do you not recognize them? Like, I don't know. You just look like a guy. I couldn't figure it out. So like, I was thinking that was part of this, as it starts to become like, you know, there is the supernatural sort of component to this, that it was like, there is like this, that messing with, the kind of the messing with the reality, where it's like, you know, this, the entity is dating Nicolas Cage's character, and then like, is at a party and sees somebody more interesting to talk to, kind of. So that's, you know, but again, this is all, the movie doesn't tell us any of this. I just sort of like, I was kind of thinking that might be a thing But I like that it didn't have that ticking clock, because again, I get tired of that, because everybody thinks they're the most clever writer. I'm like, oh, we got this twist. So, like, he only puts a spoon in his ear on Thursdays, and like, whatever, and like, who cares? And so it gets annoying to kind of have the innovation finish about like some new thriller concepts. Like, I liked that it wasn't that.
There's got to be something that drives the plot forward.
The danger has to actually come to them in a way that makes sense to us. Because like, until you get to the end, where we have the devils in the marble business, and then you know, kind of just people kind of get sort of mowed down, kind of whatever. Like, there's not a threat of that until you kind of get to that end part, and then you're just like, well, it seems like there's nothing you can do about it. Pretty much, like, you know, it's kind of bummer.
And that does seem much more like someone just yelled, "This is the third act," and then they just said, "Oh, so now this." Because I don't think it doesn't grow organically enough, I think, out of the rest of the pacing of the movie to make sense. This is a weird one. I walked out of this kind of going, there are parts in that I thought were neat. And then the further we get away from it, like, the more slippery it is in my memory, because there's just not a ton to glom onto that was interesting. It was within like a couple of days that I was like, looking at all the, headlines and reviews and comments. And I'm like, fuck, this is another one of those movies that everyone's going to love that we don't get again. Like, that just seems to always happen. I'm glad it's doing well. It's always good when horror movies do well. But I kind of was like, okay, this seems... It's not like this felt like a retread exactly of any particular thing, but nothing was like too earth shattering. And maybe that middle of the road thing is kind of what lets it play for the broader audience. But I didn't get like excited about much of this. I think Micah does a really good job. I liked her character a lot, actually. I guess when I watched it, I didn't go coded autistic. I just thought depression and probably pretty heavy anxiety. PTSD type thing. And so like all that like panicky and like, starting to have a panic attack and the heavy breathing made perfect sense to me, and that might just be my, baggage that I'm bringing with me to the thing. But I was like, okay. And when you watch her so discomforted in like every possible interaction, and then when she's talking to her mom, you see her slip out of all that concern and become either like a kid who wants to be treated like a child for comfort. And then like a switch flicks, sometimes she becomes the kid who's impatient with her mom for trying to tell her stuff. And I was like, oh God, look at how she just becomes this other person talking to her mom in a way that I again found very real and believable. And I was like, oh, she's doing some neat work here. I wish they gave her more to do, because as much as I liked what she's doing, most of it is just standing there looking at things meaningfully. And then a mystery unfolds in front of us because movie, I guess. And that part was, the bit that's supposed to keep you engaged, whether it's the ticking clock thing or the just, oh, this killer is so fascinating, I just want to learn more about him, Hannibal Lecter style or whatever. Like, it doesn't land either of those. And so you do just sort of drift rudderlessly through this film, kind of just waiting to see what the next little bit is that will strike your fancy. I think Nicolas Cage does a great job of that. It's a weird, fascinating character to try to kind of peel apart and figure out what they were going for there.
He said that the performance was partly inspired by his mother, who was a schizophrenic.
I saw that too. Yeah. And so
wild to think that was kind of his way of processing late in life. Yeah. What happened growing up is just to like channel that her and try to understand her.
Well, and it's funny too. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say that's a really fascinating read on his, like what he brings to the character, but I don't know that there's much within the writing of that character that is all that compelling. I think the parts that make that character compelling are the performance. The idea that like, I love the devil, and so I make these dolls to help the devil kill people, isn't that interesting. It's just, you have all the weirdness wrapped around it that Nicolas Cage brings, that makes it sort of very watchable, but not necessarily very sensical, I guess.
And if he's sad about that, about what he's doing, if he's conflicted about it, that's a little more interesting, but
right.
It's just once we get him in custody and he starts to do the Hannibal Lecter thing, he very quickly kills himself in a way that I guess is meant to be shocking, but that like...
But we just saw Talk to Me.
Yeah, Talk to Me in Pan's Labyrinth, and like, you know, like...
Well, and it's also like he is fully at the... Yeah, he's fully at the "it's all for you, Damien" level of devotion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like you're already at an 11.
Or like he's trying said, to get to out. He's just happy to finally have it, a way out,
I guess.
You know, because they seem to kind of imply that later, but
maybe.
Those are the layers that I wish he was allowed to play through there. But because it wants to withhold any information about the supernatural until the final third.
Yeah.
We don't get to explore what his life is like. You know?
Except for one of my favorite scenes, which is the scene in the hardware store or convenience store place.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. That gave me the willies. And if I think about it, it just gives me the creeps.
Well, and see, that's one of the bits that I also thought worked really, really well, because that sort of gives a very satisfying answer to like, okay, there's no way a person this weird, you know, because we're always watching someone like that in a movie torture someone or stalk someone or whatever it might be. And it's like, there's no way this guy goes and just buys milk, right? He's too weird. And they show us like, you're right, he is too weird to buy milk. Like he is the guy that gets kicked out of everywhere he goes because he's not just turning it on theatrically. Like it's an interesting way to sell, nope, this dude is fully like, you know, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs for Satan. Like it is 100% from, you know, from the bone out. Like it's interesting that that's a movie that does a thing I don't think I've seen otherwise.
Well, it's like he's a very Renfield-esque kind of thing. Like that's what I mean.
Yeah, true.
Finding somebody more interesting at the party to talk to. Like he's such a shell where like there is a little bit of that thing once he's in custody where you're like, kind of like the way out component. I would have loved just a little bit more meat there because like that is fascinating. Like if you get a glimmer of some human inside of that rapper. And like that's even more kind of freaky, and it is that tricky thing of like anything mind control related is tricky because like if you don't have any way to, you know, and I'm not consistent about this, like, you know, when you have like the trapdoor spider movies like in Japan, you know, like the Grudge, where it's like you just went to the wrong fucking house, like sorry, and it's sort of like and you know that guy can be really either super satisfying or not satisfying at all. Like this one kind of feels that way where like when they're at the house for the party or whatever else and he's just like, oh, I'm going to kind of talk this way. I'm going to kind of talk that way. And it's just a bummer because he's like, there's no way out. Like it's sort of like, that's going to go. And so that's a tricky choice because like, unless there's some kind of a release valve that you can either get to in time or not get to in time, but the lack of a release valve to kind of somehow possibly change the scenario kind of takes a little bit of that air out of the balloon. Like it makes it almost less consequential because you're like, well, what are you gonna do? Like it's not like, you know,
I'm all for a nihilistic ending, but that has to be because the option for redemption was missed,
exactly, right? I think that's the thing of it. And it's sort of like, so as much as there's a lot of this that I liked, like that part of it did kind of feel like, you know, as you say, like it did, you know, like, oh, now it's the third act kind of a thing. The one thing, the last thing I wanted to say on this was, you know, his filmography, Oscar Perkins' filmography is like, it's kind of, you know, like Gretel and Hansel, I like probably the best of the ones that he's done, but like Black Coat's Daughter is a tough one. Right. I mean, it's sort of like, so and The Pretty Thing, obviously we've talked about that one, you know, in the recent past. Girl in the Photographs, and so like I don't know, it's just sort of like but what I liked about this one as an expansion of the thing that he's done to this point is that what I liked about this was that like he seems to be able to be willing to let other people that have some talent bring something to the way a thing looks and is presented, because there's some shots on this that have looked better than anything that he shot in any of the movies so far. Like there are things that have legitimately good technical ability, but also artistic ability that don't necessarily feel, I don't mean this insulting towards him, but like, don't feel like that was only him, you know? And so it feels like there's been an evolution there in terms of the look and the texture of the thing that feels more mature and advancing than some of his earlier ones, which I thought was really nifty. Like, one of my favorite things about this, like, there's just some really nifty compositions that I thought were really quite cool to look at. So that I really appreciate that a ton.
I mean, my kind of left-handed compliment is in those interviews where he said he had written wanting the audience to think this and the audience to think that means that he was considering an audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, you know, like, not to be snarky, I don't think he has done that before. Maybe in Gretel and Hansel because he didn't write it, but certainly not in I'm the Pretty Thing, like, thinking about what an audience might expect and get from your work is not what he was doing before, right? So I think this is like a satanic thriller, but in slow motion. Hmm. So like he's doing the thing, like, but in the same way that Unbreakable is a action comic book movie, right? Like, it is still very much filtered through every single perk in his Perkins. And I think what it is for me is, like, you know, as a young man, I would have said he doesn't know how to tell a fucking story. And as an older man, I would say the way that he tells stories is not for me. I'm pretty sure now, like, Blackcoat's Daughter, but I didn't really dig. Certainly not I'm the Pretty
that's
Thing.
The one that's that's the
and a lot of people key. Like that one and were nuts.
I know,
for it.
I know. It I played couldn't... here. It premiered at Fantastic Fest like years ago. And that was always tough.
That was another one that was trying so hard to not tell you what was really going on that they didn't get any buy-in for the audience because they couldn't give you any information. And it's like, that is his jam and that's my least favorite thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
This did not infuriate me like I'm the Pretty Thing. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't as bored as Blackcoat's Daughter. This may very well be the best movie for me so far that he's written and directed. That still puts it at like a 4.5, and just a you know, hats off to people who were, you know, like the remarks, like, this was the scariest movie of the whole decade. This blew my colon out my butthole. Like, well, that makes sense, but
where it goes from, yeah.
But as with Skinamarink, I'm just like, are you sure that you're not reviewing the trailer?
Right.
Because the movie did not have these things. But if it did for them, that's fantastic. I wish I could feel it. So yeah, I mean, for me, it's like a 4.5. Tiptoe through the tulips with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
I was like, Matt, you may address the court. Like, no.
I know. I'm just trying to, like, yeah, I think I'll start by saying, yeah, I'm right near there with you. I'm going to say 4 out of 10. This has been another one of those weird movies where, like I'd mentioned earlier, like, you could just see that this was going over really well with, like, everybody else. And I don't quite get how or why. And even like my buddy Ryan, that I talk about horror movies with a lot, saw it and he's like, this is pretty fucking cool. I'm like, really? And like, wasn't even able to kind of suss out what it was he saw compared to what I saw that like made him enjoy it more. And I don't know. It just felt like it was pretty slight. Like it, I guess maybe just that kind of there's a certain percentage of the population. I would imagine it's dwindling though. That is just kind of like, oh shit with the devil's scary. Cause the devil, you know, and maybe that counts for more than I thought it would. And so that this just kind of works differently for some people. But that to me doesn't automatically make something scary. Like what if the devil is killing people? I'm like, I don't know. What if the guy next door is killing people? That's scarier. Like, I don't know. It just, something about it just didn't click. And I can't quite even pin down what it is people like so much. Cause they're like, oh, but Nicolas Cage. I'm like, yeah, that is neat, but that doesn't, it's not enough. You know, if Jason just sat in a chair across from somebody staring at him for 45 minutes, like Friday the 13th movies wouldn't be particularly scary either.
My dinner with Jason.
But yeah, I don't know.
Remains of the day that is Friday and also the second week of month.
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess this was kind of a pretty slight experience watching it in the theater with like a, you know, warm feelings. I'm like, oh, there's some neat stuff. And then just sort of puzzled since then. And yeah, so it's, I'm not mad. I didn't get it. And I don't quite even know what I'm missing despite having seen it, which is a weird feeling. So yeah, 4.
Yeah. I'm going to be the high man on the totem pole here, but like not egregiously high. I was really taken with his ability to like let loose of the reins a little bit and some of the creative components, like some of the cinematography, some of the editing stuff that seemed to speak with a different creative voice, which I thought was super, super cool. I was really into that. And I liked, since I watched a goddamn many police procedurals and detective-y things and all kinds of stuff, that I liked taking that kind of thing where you expect that's the shape and they just kind of reshape it a little bit, which I really dug. That being said, there's a lot of it that's undercooked in that respect, but I do like that there just wasn't that same framework that you kind of come to expect. And there's a few moments this with some genuine unease that were really well orchestrated. All that being said, though, I just think like there could have been, you know, some more stuffing to really kind of bring it out, and then just the fact that it was not necessarily a release valve for the devil's gonna make you do some stuff up in here, and like not having a cheat code to get around that just sort of was like kind of a bummer, because even when it doesn't work, like think about the original, like not the American remake, but think about the not the Japanese Grudge, but the American remake of the Grudge, where like, they, for a long stretch of that second and third act of the American version, is like they think they've got a solution. Like it doesn't work, but they think they have a solution, and they're like, "Well, I gotta get the, I have the newt, I gotta get this thing, I got this thing," and that's happening. And there's like a, there's indications to the viewer that it's not gonna work, but like, you know, there's still something, versus being like, I walk into a room and I'm like, "Oh," and I'm going to go kill these people. Oh. Like at a certain point, that's not as interesting. You know, it's like, it stops being, you know, like, you know, I mean, I know we have very different opinions about Serpent and Rainbow. I don't want to open up that can of worms, but like, you know, as somebody who studied Wade Davis for a while, I'm in anthropology and books and whatever, like I have a different feeling about that movie, but one of the scariest things about a lot of that stuff in terms of what they show the movie anyway, is that, and much like the Stephen King short about the guy who gets bit by the snake, who's like on the counter, and he's like, he's alive, but he's like read beautifully by Oliver Platt in the book on tape, by the way, with that one. It's so good, but in that same kind of thing of being like you have to include some other element to, like, you know, like I'm almost powerless to stop this, but I could potentially affect it this way. And like not having that in there just feels kind of clinical in a way. That's the right word. And I just like, it kind of takes a little bit of the air out of the balloon. I think it's more interesting if the person's fighting against themselves or cuts in and out of it, or is aware of both things. Where, you know, like they're aware of what's happening, and they can stop, and they're trying to reset, and they've got it for a little bit, and then they can't, and anything like that to just make it more just sort of like the kind of a dead eyed kind of meander, not too dissimilar from somebody walking in front of me in the grocery store, like, get the fuck out of my way. Like that kind of thing where people always are brain controlled. They have the same walk of like, where do they keep the wheat bran and the wheat germ and the old wheat? Where is it? Like you, anywhere but this aisle, you need to get out of my way. That walk, that's the walk I'm talking about. Like you got to have something to kind of offset that. But, you know, so like I said, I'll be high on some pole here. I'm going to say 6. I'll say 6 out of 10. Oof. 6 out of 10. 6 out of 10. That scene in the convenience store is just, it's just, even thinking about it gives me the willies. out of 10. Just like he's still the creepy man's back again.
So fun.
Word again. Yeah. God sakes almighty. Out of 10.
And I think the what you're talking about with needing something extra, some like way to fight it or something, it is a function of it not giving us the reveal about what was actually happening until the last third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it wasn't like a twist at the end. It was just like, now here's the beat where the characters find out what the deal is.
Yeah.
Like it would be like if it was 20 minutes before the end of the ring and before they figured out the 7 days.
Yeah.
It didn't quite hold together. Anyway, all those things happened and we did nothing to stop it.
Right.
We'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about these other two flicks.
Yes, sir.
These lighthearted romps that we watched.
Knee slappers.
So coming up next, we have The Devil's Bath or El Baño del Diablo. This is a movie that was made.
That was also the name of my new premium tequila.
That is so great. I love it.
Isn't it like Teufelsbad in German? Like, come on, you're not even trying. El Baño del Diablo. For the rare discerning customer who thought that The Witch was pretty good, but it was too much of a lighthearted romp.
Yeah.
Comes The Devil's Bath, because this one does not have anybody asking anybody if they want to live deliciously and taste butter. Mm. It's more these people live in a forest in like a subsistence farming kind of medieval situation, and their life is super shitty.
Yes.
And a woman gets married to a guy so that she can be his beard because he is secretly gay. And her life is super shitty. And she has to do all the same hard work as the men. And then she's expected to come home and like cook and clean as well. And she wants to have a baby and she's expected to have a baby, but her husband is secretly gay. And everything's very, very sad.
Yes.
And that's because the ultimate, like what we see at the beginning is a woman chucking a baby off a waterfall and then turning herself into the police and being executed. And we learned that that is the end goal, is to commit a crime and get sentenced to death and then pardoned by the priest and then executed. Because if you kill yourself, you go to hell. But life is so shitty, you can't hang out. So yeah, the horror here is just the sheer unmaking of this poor lady.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also just sort of like I've often said, you know, when we talk about things like The Walking Dead or like with the Halloween movies, you know, like if you're not in Haddonfield, you're okay. And it's sort of like in this kind of scenario, you have this kind of small community that they just work off of the very close proximity of the things that they have available to them. And it's sort of like three villages over, they might have DSL at this point. Like, we don't know, but it's like, but these guys are just grinding into the ground in this way that is just very little hope to begin with. Like, I mean, like the wedding thing towards the beginning or the earlier part of it, it's just like, my goodness, I guess it's that in and of itself. You're just sort of like, well, there's not a lot of like joy or like things that we could recognize or things that look familiar. But then as it goes along, and I will fully grant, like as much as I really like this movie, I will fully grant that like it's not exactly like brisk and there's not a lot of like real big spikes and like heavy stuff. Like, whereas The Witch like boils and boils and boils and boils and poof. But it's like, this doesn't necessarily do that, but it's more just these little moments of just like, just, you know, just despair that like just drip with just sort of like, well, what's the other goddamn option? Like, there isn't one. And it's sort of, and that's really where a lot of that stuff plays into. And then, but I don't know about y'all, but like about halfway through, I had forgotten about the lady in the waterfall. Like, I'd kind of forgotten about that. And then when she's like schlepping through the forest and she finds that little like altar with the little head cage and whatever, and that was an interesting thing because like it's an arresting image for sure.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But then also what was interesting to me is I always think about like the use of resources, and it's like in that scenario it's like they've created this cage like for the head, and they've got all this kind of stuff. Like, they put some resources into this thing of a place that don't have a lot of resources. It tells you how important it is. It's like, it's not just sort of like they just made a little wicker basket. Like grandma just sort of made a little thing. Like, it's a serious metal fucking thing.
Yeah, they like to have their whole body posed too. And
yeah, it's not just sort of like a, it's a big thing. It's
very much a, like, I loved also the signs that they had that were clearly for people who were illiterate, right? So they just had pictures of like this lady threw somebody, threw a baby in a waterfall, and now she's dead. That's why she's dead. Don't throw a baby in the waterfall. Please stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to, right? Like, so it was the in the criminal justice system in like Shitzakia, they have to, they are very clear on making every, making an example of every criminal, it seems like.
Yeah, well, this, the thing that sold me on this, because this is a weird movie in a way, but the thing that kind of sold me on it once I started kind of wrapping my brain around what was going on is that this movie, in its own very different way, is maybe as bleak as something like Martyrs. But it doesn't have to give you the horror of feeling like you've had all your skin ripped off. It's just the soul crushing weight of an eternity of this life. There's you're not going to win the lottery and suddenly you'll have, you know, by the way, when you said DSL, my brain went dick sucking lips. What does that mean?
It's usually one of the first things that human civilizations develop after fire.
That's true. But no, but I mean, there is no golden ticket situation for this woman. The best you could hope for is like, oh, maybe you would, upon going hunting or something, you'd kill a larger animal than you'd anticipated and have an extra couple days of meat this month. Like that would be Christmas. And it's like, yeah, this is a bummer. I get how you'd maybe run out of steam and hope at some point there.
So the other thing too, that, and you know, I complain about not having time, but then I do these type of things. So when watching this thing, if we do a little bit of research around on it, you find out that it is based on the research material. There we are, the research material of this lady named Kathy Stewart, who's a professor at UC Davis, and so she wrote a paper on this, or a research publication on this. She's a professor of Germanic history and all this kind of stuff. She's written a bunch of stuff, but the one that this is based on, you can go download it from academia.org. And so, like, I got it and I read some of it. I've not read all of it. The lady that this film is based on, that I've read a chunk of. It's so fascinating that, like, you can anthropologically examine the role of this, or the church did this, or they said this, or this is how the people interpreted it, or whatever. But if you just had a little bit more influence of culture, of different other things that were kind of happening in the same time period, like all of it would have been different, like entirely different, even with a little tiny little bit of influence. But because there isn't that, they're still using bleaches for headaches. And that's, and like that in and of itself is fascinating, because then you take it against the power of kind of mental health or depression or despair or all this kinds of stuff or that play into this. And you're like, that almost, not to diminish by any stretch depression or any of those kind of things, but it's almost, it's a product of the lack of, you know, any kind of integration into anywhere else in the damn world. Like, this is what causes this to occur. And I think, and I thought that was an interesting concept too. So it's like, you know, this was probably maybe a more interesting movie to think about all the concepts than it was to necessarily watch, because it doesn't have as much, like, you know, action necessarily. I did find it just really compelling, and I found it very interesting. And enjoyed it, but do recognize that it is a quiet little sad thing.
Yeah,
it is. But I did find it very, very compelling, and it's just so completely immersive in the way that like a fantasy movie would be, except it's just a completely foreign reality to what I've experienced in my life. Like, they have no electricity, you know, no phone, no light, no motor car, not a single luxury among them, except like some cheap hooch that they can pass around at their weird festivals. And yeah, it is just like this kind of slice of death of these people.
Yeah.
Living out in the middle of nowhere.
The goddamn finger thing. Jesus fucking Christ. You want to talk about some deep folklore shit? Like, yeah, well, it'll give you a finger and then it'll help you conceive a baby. Like, oh. Mm-hmm. Just the, sit with that for a minute.
Also,
and the creepy treatment. Fucking hair thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The treatment for depression back in the before times, before lithium, was that you had to have a horsehair threaded into the skin at the nape of your neck. And then you were expected to agitate the horsehair by pulling it through the holes back and forth.
Yeah, so like you're flossing.
The wound. Yeah, and keep it from healing, because that would make it much more efficient for all of the bad thoughts to leave your head.
Yeah, and or maybe just make it so you like, couldn't focus on being bummed out.
Yeah, and it has the added bonus of showing the whole village this is what happens to the women who complain.
Yes, as well as probably getting you a wicked infection so you die off and aren't a problem anymore.
I was actually thinking about that in relation to the we got to go out and we got to go get the fish in this very weirdly both efficient and non-efficient manner. And it's like watching the technique is this, the technique is this. Part of that scene that was, at least the way it struck me, was that it was like, part of it was like, yes, this is the way we do these things and this is how this is done and yada yada. But part of it kind of almost felt like it's like a not like a trap, but more just sort of like a, you know, you do it this way or there's a good chance that you're going to get some kind of a god-awful old ages infection and you're going to be dead. And it's like, there's lots of ways to advance technology, but this system does not allow for this. Like there's no bandwidth there to expand. And so like watching the way that they, that little wood trough thing with the fish or whatever else, like why on earth would you do it this way? And it's sort of like, well, if you're not in the spot you're told to be in, then like when the guy moves the knife for the thing or whatever else, like you could get got, or you could get your leg crushed under this big wood stone thing that's underneath this little trough thing for no fucking reason. Like there's no reason for any of that. It's just that we have done it this way, and so we will continue to do it this way, and your place is so cemented that it's like there's no leeway. And like and I love that they use a lot of these just steeped in kind of examples of this without ever like really going into like a lot of explanation or having the person be like, well, have we thought about not doing it that way? Like that's not even part of the conversation. It's like, it's just as inevitable as gravity is. It's like, it's just, this is it, period, the end. And it's like,
you're super weird for wanting anything else.
Yeah.
Like they can't fathom why. They're like, well, of course your life is shitty. All of our lives are incredibly shitty all the time. But do you hear us complain? No.
Yeah, it is the less funny version of the people that just kind of collect filth in Monty Python. And you're just like, because they look about the same. They're just kind of sad people covered in garbage and mud. And you're like, oh, but these people aren't making a bit out of it. This is just shitty in their life. Like, oh. And somehow that is incredibly compelling.
Like if you go to a major city, because we're what, 1700s?
Yeah, I think so.
I thought it was maybe even earlier. Yeah.
So like this isn't the Middle Ages. Like if you went to a decent sized city, you would have indoor plumbing and electricity, but gas fixtures, and you'd have like some degree of modern comfort.
Right? Yeah, things would get more recognizable if you were in like London.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing that I love about when you have the many, and we're all products of the public school system, so we're keenly aware of this, but how much bullshit is fed to us from a very early age. And then, like, one of the things, like, oh, the Middle Ages, like, everybody was, like, oh, covered in crap and eating rotten things, and, like, their face was rotting off and their boils and things, and, no, that's not a thing. Like, it's not even close to true, but it's sort of like, but if you go out a few layers of the onion and you get further and further away from, where things are happening, then you do get a de-evolution to some degree. And so I think they kind of play into that a little bit with this too, where it's like you just have to kind of take things as they are. Because, go a little bit further back from this, then you get into, you know, the kind of like, well, you've got a headache, you've got demons in your blood, like we should put a hole in the side of your skull to do this other thing. Like,
Well, they're not that far from that, because they find like a cow skull in the river, and everybody's like, shit, don't let anyone else see you touched that. What?
Yeah.
Maybe it was anthrax, right?
No, they had
you just made me picture. Oh, damn it, Anthony Kiedis as the like medieval doctor. Going, it would appear there's a devil in your dick and demons in your semen.
We will fix it with some blood sugar sex magic and then burn you as a witch.
This is my partner. He's a flea.
What kind of skin is this? Flea.
Oh, yeah, I will. I'm running away.
So yeah, this is definitely not for everybody. This is and not because it's so extreme or so whatever, but it's just this is a very specific flavor of tea. Like, this is not a and that's not even to sound egotistic, I don't mean like that, but it's more just sort of like this is certainly not an easy one to get into per se. And this is another one of those things too. This occurred to me later on, which was that, like, you know, is that like there's enough ucky in this that, like, if you're just a straight up academic kind of person, like, you know, that kind of a person, this is probably going to be a little much. And if you're expecting some real whiz bang kind of, you know, big over the top kind of stuff, like an Empedocle, like a, you know, like any of the South Asian things that are like we got folklore, we're gonna stick it up your ass, like, you know, it's like, you know, Satan's slaves kind of level stuff. You're not getting that either. So, like, it's just kind of one of those things, like, without a place necessarily. But still, I don't know. I was very, very impressed with the whole thing. I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff to it, even though, like I said, it isn't exactly what you would expect to get out of it, especially in terms of, like, pulse.
It's closer to Oscar bait than, like, a thriller or horror movie of any kind, really. It's like it's one lesbian kiss away from being that, like, sad historical documentary fiction thing. It just, there's no unrequited lesbian love in this, and that's why it never won an Oscar. But I agree with what you're saying. Like, it's hard to talk about a movie. It's like, this was really neat. It was not that agreeable to watch, but for me, it wasn't, like, hard to sit through.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't know how that can be, because I was, like, chewing my face off watching Long Legs. And this is way more slowly paced than Long Legs, but it succeeds in getting me to bathe in the atmosphere of it, I think. More than anything else, it's just like, I am catching this vibe of, and it is a vibe of bleak depression, but, like, I'm bought in and I'm wondering what's happening next and all the things that I wasn't doing during Long Legs. And this is really cool to look at. It has, it's not the kind of movie where you have, like, floodlights in the middle of the forest.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of makes the reckoning look even cheaper. it's authenticity. So, for me, I'd say this is a 7.5 out of 10. There's some really neat stuff in here.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, as we all, I think, have said at this point, it's hard to explain the weird, like, the two opinions you kind of have to hold watching this thing of, like, God, this is bleak and kind of, like, insane and fascinating, like, watching someone vivisect something. And then also, like, is this just intensely boring? Because nothing much is happening. It's like, no, it's all happening behind the eyes, and you're like, fuck. Like, somehow this gets you to watch. So it's the strangest, hardest thing to recommend, but I do think if you're at all curious from hearing us talk about it, like, give it 15 minutes and understand it will only get slower, and then and if it catches your interest at all, like, I think you'll find it's worth the journey. But yeah, it's a strange little beast, but I gave it a try and was really impressed with this. So yeah, I think, I'll even go just a titch higher, and I'm going to give this an 8 because God, this is one of the more compelling movies I've watched in a minute. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that, I'm in that realm too. Like, I just, like, it's hard to get your head around exactly what the deal was. That the one, the movie I was thinking of, I don't think we've ever done it. I kind of mixed on whether or not we should, but there's this Swiss Austrian one movie called, and I'm not going to get the naming, the pronunciation correct, but it's Senen Tunchi, like Ghost of the Alps. And it's like, it's a basically, it's based on like the kind of succubus sort of fable. And it's like this, like idiots and this kind of farming, ranching kind of alpine place. Like they kind of buy into all the things and they're going to do this thing where you create a spell or you do a thing. And then it like makes this like house lady who you can like have sex with, and she cleans your house, and you fashion her out of a broom, and it's sort of like, it's like this fable thing that you kind of do. But then the thing, as it starts to kind of gain its own sentience, it's always like, oh, fuck these fools, and it's sort of like, but it's gonna kind of turn against each other and turn all violent and gross. So like, this is that's cousin. It just doesn't have like that one has a lot of third act kind of, blech, but this one doesn't have that necessarily. But it's that same kind of a thing where we are gonna drop you into this thing. And you can't see anything that's recognizable anywhere, and so you kind of have to just, you're kind of stuck here, and there's some power to that, even though, like I said, the pulse of this one is lower. But I'll be up there too. Like I said, there's a lot I really liked about this, crafted beautifully well, and well handled, especially by the lead girl. So I'm gonna say 8 out of 10, to go. Splurching through the mud. Splurch, splurch, splurch.
And a one horse open. So.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's how it goes sometimes. Indeed. It's true. I have to write that down. Splurching through the mud. Da, 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 da. Okay. So ultimately and inevitably, we need to talk about men, los hombres, of course. Let me see if I can sum this up fairly quickly. This movie is about a woman whose boyfriend is kind of emotionally manipulative, and she wants to leave him, and he threatens to kill himself, and then he slaps her, and then he kills himself in front of her by jumping off the top of the building. So she goes to stay in an Airbnb that is in a creepy little town, you know, capital C, capital L, capital T. And everyone in the town has the same face. There are only men in the town. There's a little boy with the same face as like the vicar and the kind of gormless guy who shows her around. And ultimately it seems to be that we have all the archetypes of annoying men. So like we have the little boy who is inappropriate and pushes the like boundaries of consent. And we have the vicar who blames her for all of the things that have gone wrong in her relationship. And you got the kind of clueless, condescending guy who shows her around and mansplains things. And Christ, does it crawl through this movie to a conclusion that is a like an amazing feat of special effects, but it is a movie that just literally disappears up its own ass and leaves me just like, but the, so then what was any of this for? And like the only perspective I can get is from one of my wife's friends who said it was like a guy explaining feminism to you for an hour and a half that felt like four. I was like, that's where I landed with this one. I was just, and watching it again was no better. I was like, oh, this is so slow. Oh, this is so pointless. Oh, what do you think that any of the things you were saying are not just completely obvious? Like, you do think you're blowing people's minds with this. And like, it is so weird because this is such an Oz Perkins movie, and yet it's the guy who made fucking Ex Machina, and that just confuses me greatly. So I've now watched this movie through twice, and that's the most I'm willing to watch a movie that I don't understand now at two very distinct phases of my life.
Well, and it's sort of like, you know, you talk about like the kind of the male, kind of a male perspective on that part of it. Like the thing, and you're probably not going to like this comparison, but I was thinking about with Alex Garland and the movies that he's made, where, you know, you have wrote 28 Days Later, and then of course you have Sunshine, and then Ex Machina, then Annihilation, then this one, then Civil War, and like, you know, the stuff that he's, and a couple of things he's written, and all this kind of stuff. But then with this one, you know, getting into this particular subject matter and the way that it's portrayed and whatever, it at times reminded me of Aronofsky's movie Mother. Where, like, you know, there are parts of Mother where... Oh, sorry.
No, that is one thought that I had. I was like, this is a movie that is very not concerned with telling a story in any kind of objective reality, and is very much more all about the symbolism and of what you're trying to get across. And the symbolism is pretty heavy handed. And you could say all of those things about Mother, but I absolutely loved that one. So
That one was more bold. And I think Aronofsky like stepped up to the plate to just lean into the extremeness of how it all, the whole second half of that movie just goes. It's just this colliding, like clattering, just over the top thing. That's just like, it's bombastic, it's nuts, and just like all this kind of stuff. Like, you know, he really gets after it in a real big way. Whereas like this one, I think it's not unfair to say that like it does kind of come across as like a mansplaining nesting doll, because it's not as big of a like a approach. Like his Garland's whole thing is so like he always keeps things so contained. Like if you think about any of his movies, he likes to smoosh it down. Like that's always like his thing. Like even in Ex Machina, like the big fucking scene is like between the robot character and a guy, like in that hallway. It's not all the rest of stuff that's happening. It's not the other bodies. It's like this little itty bitty spot. It's like he always likes to take these like kind of maniacally crazy situations and go shoop, and make them dinky. And like in this one, it seemed like that was kind of the same thing again, where he just takes this like very horrific, crazy thing that's like, is she just seeing stuff? Has she lost her mind? Is this some kind of purgatory situation? Whatever. And then just sort of makes it very pedestrian and kind of like smaller until it like gets in its third act and just goes completely into left field in a wild sort of way that did you see a little bit of, at least I did anyway, like a little bit of some of the same imagery from Annihilation that kind of comes into there, like of like the kind of the shapeless to shape forms and like the rebirth things and the mirroring and all that kind of stuff. Like it's like, yeah, he was still working that out of his system, I think, a few years later. But like, so that was his biggest problem. I mean, in my mind, that's this thing's biggest problem, is that it needed to be a hell of a lot bigger. I'm not talking a cast of thousands, but I'm just talking about like there needed to be almost like a Invasion of Body Snatchers, Stepford Wives level of, like, just bigger, just more shit, more shocking, like just bombastic stuff. Whether or not it works, it just had that. There'd be more of that kind of stuff happening, because like without that size and that bombast, like it's easy and justified to get kind of like really mired in all the kind of like oh, she ate a bite of the apple, like oh, for fuck's sake.
I saw that this time and I'd forgotten about that.
Jeez.
And I was like, oh. And then the guy goes, mustn't do that. Forbidden fruit. And it's like he just leans out of the screen and goes, eh? And he's like, knock that shit off. You know, like Mother had that really strong symbolism, but like when Jess watched it, she didn't pick up on the biblical allegory at all. Because they didn't call them Cain and Abel and Adam and Eve, and they didn't push that angle as hard. It was just like the guy shows up, they remove a rib from his back, and then suddenly the lady shows up, right? Like you can connect the dots, but they're not just smacking you with it. And then this just kind of is. And then it's like, if it's going to be all men are as one and all men are shitty, why are there only four people in the whole town? Surely there are other ways that dudes are shitty that they could show, and then they could have like a big song and dance number at the end. But the big thing for me is you can do a thing that's entirely, you know, obviously allegorical, but you can't neglect some level of narrative structure and story.
Yeah.
And you have to end your literal story with enough satisfaction for the viewer. And I think like Mother did that. It wrapped up its weird ass story in a way that made sense within the story's universe. And this one is just like, I don't know how at all to feel about the end. There's the bit, and even leaving aside that whether or not she kills him is vague, I don't know how she feels. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel. I don't know how Alex Garland felt when he wrote it. Like, I'm surprised that this was not his first movie, because this is a very earnest kid, you know, film school movie to me. Like, not on the level of the filmmaking, but on the level of the script writing. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the if you want to really get into making a thing be very allegorical, then the mechanism of the thing of self-regeneration, of the way that this thing is regenerating itself, one could say, is that talking about trauma? Is that talking about women's role in society? Is that talking about how, like, who directs women's role in society? Like, there's a lot of those questions that can be asked, but if it's going to be one of those kind of things, like, there needs to be some weirder shit earlier. Where, you know, like, it's weird enough to keep seeing Roy Kinnear's face and everything, but then it's sort of like, then you can, I don't know if about you guys, but I had the thing of being like, are we seeing her, like, psychosis, not to be insensitive, but, like, just it's like, you know, the first time this guy, just kind of the housekeeper guy, is like kind of with her, then she's like internalized that, and then she's like projecting it onto other people that she's interacting with. So it's like becoming this like one voice thing, and it's like, okay, well, that's fine, but like there has to be at least something to tie that to, like, because if there's not like that cheat, if it's just sort of like you don't lay that out, then that feels a little bit cheaty. Of being like,
yeah, because it's like, if you're making something that's designed to have your audience go, ooh, I wonder what that's all about, you better fucking know what that's all about. And you better tell us. Or at least give us enough clues so we can put it together. Yeah.
Matt, Josh and I have been kind of discussing this in front of you as if you don't speak English and you're just sort of grinning at us. Where did some of these things land for you?
I mean, that's pretty close to a description of what I've been doing.
Okay.
No, it's interesting. I like this quite a bit. So I was like, oh, this is going to go over like a lead balloon. But I also think I guess for me, like my viewing of it, I found a way that this made sense to me. And it was just kind of enough. Also, I don't know that I was asking for much from it. So maybe that's part of it, is like, maybe I'm letting it off the hook too easily. But I took, like, actually, there's two main things to address. One, I took this to be, as we get kind of more of her backstory and kind of what led to the vacation and her, you know, relationship with this shithead and all that, I'm like, oh, okay. So all the, you know, kind of obvious and over the top shitty stuff that these people are doing around her, is it like, I didn't take it to be, here's all the ways men can be shitty to women. I took it as, this shitty man was shitty to her, and it fucked up her ability to not suspect everything around her of being the, you know, one step removed from the next thing being shitty again. You know what I mean? Like, it's, she's got her PTSD of like, well, you've been hurt by this man and now men are even scarier, you know, and sort of her going through like, I'm going to try to get away from this, get a break from it all. And like, nope, it's just this follows me until I deal with it. And I took the bonkers stuff at the end of maybe her and, you know, in her interactions over the phone and shit with her friend and stuff is her getting to a point where she's decided she has to kind of like come to terms with that, because you can't live life thinking that all this kind of horrible shit is just around the corner at all times, or you don't get to live it. And maybe her friend showing up and seeing her sitting there, it's sort of reminding me of the end of Ready or Not, when she's just sitting there having a smoke of like, okay, she put herself through the ringer psychologically and is now maybe ready that she's got her good friend there. Now she can kind of start talking through the stuff she's been maybe trying to avoid and deal with it. And then these kinds of things will no longer be the way the world feels to her. And that to me seemed like a kind of complete idea.
But who is the green man?
Who cares?
Well, I mean,
really want Alex Garland felt, but
but I mean, no, I mean, it's close enough to
look at it, you
right?
Know?
But I mean, like, it's close enough to the, you know, the green man and Hearn and all that, where it's just a, you know, the symbol of male fertility. So it's just kind of the man was kind of what I took it to be.
Well, and then
man.
Well, in the way
are we not men? We diva.
Well, and like the entry,
are we Steve Irwin? Sorry, go ahead,
Crikey. Now, the thing that the one of the little bits of film craft that I really dug, because I mean, Rory Kinnear, like, you know, go over his filmography, other kind of stuff, like that dude is a very talented actor. Like,
oh, certainly,
he's been a lot of stuff, and he's I don't know anything because I haven't seen any of this stuff, but from what I understood, that he's a pretty prolific like stage career and done some big productions and stuff, and he's apparently he just has like a hell of a career, and he's a real talented dude. But what I really found very unsettling with the green fella was that like, or the naked guy in the garden, is that like, you know, if you're at a place that you're not familiar with really, and you've just gone through this horrific trauma, this mess that she went through, and then just trying to take some control of her life or whatever, if you're someplace you don't know and there's somewhere else, and then there's like just some naked crazy person like, you know, outside your home or trying to get in your home or all that kind of stuff, it's like I don't give a shit if you're Dwayne the Rock Johnson. That's pretty fucking scary. And what I like about that as it builds as it goes, because the thing kind of behaves in a different way as it goes along, where early on it's very much that kind of like threat that you would think, which is that kind of like you kind of rapey, attacky, assaulty kind of threat. And then it's like over time, it kind of the shape of it sort of changes to where it becomes more intimate and more personal and less just like visceral, like a naked dude saying their, you know, thing. And when the cop says like, oh, they released him, like, wasn't any threat, he was just kind of nutty and we gave him some clothes and sent him on his way. It's like, you know, for a lot of people that it's not a personal thing, then yeah, that kind of checks out. Like, it's like, you know, like, well, you're perceiving a threat. It's not really a threat, but you're just kind of perceiving it that way. And to almost to that stretch of being like, ah, bitches be crazy. But it's sort of like it over time, as she's starting to deal with this over expanding thing, the shape of that dealie is changing. And to the point at the end where that regeneration scene where he finally ends up being the husband guy, and he just says, it's like, oh, I just want you to love me. And it's sort of like, well, tough shit. Like, that's sort of like, it's not really, you know, just because that's what you want doesn't mean that's what you're going to get, pal. And it's like, so like it takes all these different, this kind of guilt or this shame or this responsibility or whatever, like it evolves its shape over the course of the movie. And like that, that mechanism I thought was really, really great. I think the one thing that it really suffered and really, besides just some pretty, you know, kind of point A to point B symbolism and stuff that I think could have been workshopped a little bit better, I just think it needed to be bigger. I just think it needed to be just a loony bin scene, like in a grocery store, and like frantic, you know, she's running around, there's just people and things and all this kind of stuff, and they put Rory Kinnear's face on a bunch of fish in like the counter in the little glass case or whatever. Just really go bug nuts with it, because it's just because it stays so much smaller. And I don't mean this offensively, Joshua, but when it stays smaller, then it's easier to get like hung up on just like all the ways in which that it's glaringly undercooked at parts. So like, I think that's part of that's a result of that.
Yeah, being,
you know,
being more gonzo would definitely make it feel more complete. Yeah.
Well, and like that scene, that scene, I don't know about you guys, but that scene where she's like walking, she kind of goes down a little hill, and it's like a little drainagey, creaky thing, and then like she's going to the tunnel, and there's a little echoey thing, and sees that shape, and then she's like, I should start going the other way. And then like just running, and it's like, I don't know, men, women, young, old, whatever, like it's just universally freaky as shit. So like some of those bits, like those really resonated for sure. It's a mixed bag. I find it fascinating and also irritating to read some of the people online, because like people, there's a level of like, well, if you didn't get it, then you're just not seeing the blah, 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 blah. And other people just being like, it's like, this is the worst thing to happen to film since Nazis. And like, okay, for fuck's sake. Like,
for one thing, the Nazis made some amazing films with Leni Riefenstahl. I mean, fuck Nazis, sure, all the way to hell and back. But that's one of the few things that people are willing to say in positive thing about it. Anyway, go right ahead.
Next week's assignment: Triumph of the Will.
But like, or fucking Birth of a Nation, for that matter. So in this case, it's like, so I'm not picking on Josh. That's not what I mean at all. But it's more just sort of like, I do think this might have also fallen into that realm of, you know, talking about reviewing the trailer kind of a thing. It's sort of like, it's about this lady, and then she's being pursued by this like thing and yada yada yada, and it's sort of like, did you just see like the posters and the trailer, or like what did you see? And then also this came out in 2022, so we're just on the back end of like still working through the pandemic-y stuff, and at that point nobody knew how to behave in public, and everybody's dealing with a lot of things, and so I don't know that an undercooked intimate sort of deconstruction of like trauma management was sort of like in this format was going to necessarily like either be executed the right way or be received the right way by a lot of people. Like, it's not the movie's fault. It's certainly not anybody's fault that didn't jive with it. Cause like I said, I'm kind of in the middle, but there's more that I got out of it than I didn't. So I mean, this is a fascinating thing, and God bless Roy Kinnear for just, you know, pulling out Alec Guinness and Kind Hearts and Coronets and just like, I'm wearing all the faces.
So I said there were two things I felt had to be addressed about this. The other one was, I didn't notice it was the same dude's face.
Oh.
Oh, no.
At all. Did not for a second notice that watching this.
But even the Easter Island head kid?
Yeah. Just did not.
Well, that's fair.
So I'm just going, maybe I got to look into that whole I can't remember names and faces thing.
If you have like a little bit of face blindness, then
I just did not.
The different hairstyles and stuff would be enough to throw you off.
But it kind of is, because that's the kind of broad thing I look at to recognize people. Mm-hmm. And one other thing too, I did make one of my oh so rare notes while watching this movie, because at some point, I think it's the priest who is, when he's, you know, having his backwards ass way of trying to talk her through things, says, I've decided you are an expert in carnality. And the voice in my head, sounding exactly like it does at the start of the podcast, said, if there's a degree on her wall, I haven't seen it. And I said, shut up, brain. That's not the right kind of joke for this movie. But it made me laugh, and I was like, I better make a note of that, because I have to make sure I say it publicly. So enjoy that. Thank you, my bim bam.
Good Lord.
Ultimately, it does to me feel like every guy in the village seems to have his own way of addressing her in a way that's shitty. I think I could follow either of your guys' theories about you know, having it be more of a representation of her trauma or grief than of just like the stuff that women have to put up with. But it didn't hit me that way the first time. Like going through the second time, like I felt like I got maybe another, it wasn't the layers, it was just like another shot at seeing a narrative that was under the symbolism somewhere. So I had a slightly higher perception of it than when I was just like, this is just fucking wankery of the highest degree. And it turns out it's wankery of like a mid degree. It's not. Yeah. You know, like a 201 class, right? And, you know, like it's not the 101 introduction where you have to go 4 days a week for 50 minutes at 8 a.m. for no fucking reason. It's like a 201 level of wankery.
The only thing I do want to ask super, super fast, just super quick, and we can get out of here. The thing about that is we keep cutting back to getting more data about that fight and then him going on the roof and then the death and then that whole that deal. What do you make much of the thing of being like whether or not he jumped or just like slipped? Because like the movie seems to want to some degree, the movie seems to want to be like whether or not he did it on purpose or not, what got him into that position was this level of victimization that like you are responsible for, you know, him breathing or not. And if you don't take that seriously enough or else, that what does it say about you as a person, and blah, 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 beyond your conscience and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, and I thought that was interesting because that the last time they cut back to the apartment after, you know, he's struck her and she's on the ground and then she like throws him, gets him out. And then the whole thing is when you get the shot of the, you hear like a thud noise and then like whatever. And then when you see the other shot of him past the window, it's like a look of surprise. And so it's like, oh. And it's like, and I don't know what I make of that, but I don't know if it 100% really even matters necessarily, but it just sort of was like, I thought that was interesting that they like played around that idea of whether or not he like did it on purpose or if it was like an accident. But then it was sort of like the part of what she's carrying around is like, well, what put him on the roof? And it's like, well, what put him on the roof is that, you know, he's just like codependent jackass.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that she has no responsibility for that necessarily. And it's like, but I thought that was interesting that the movie kind of played with that a little bit. What they meant by that, I'm not sure.
It made me think of one of the guys who survived jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, who said, like, as soon as I jumped, I realized with like a wash of clarity that nothing in my life was unsolvable except the fact that I just jumped off a fucking bridge.
I read that exact same thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's an amazing documentary. If you get a chance to watch it, it's a little tough at parts, but it's very interesting.
I figured that, to me, that explained the look on his face. It was just like,
yeah, kind of totally makes sense.
That I was going to do this, and then I really thought I wanted to do this until I did it, and now, but I mean, I think the right way to watch this is just to watch the multiple birth scene, just for
that's pretty cool.
The imagery of it is neat, but in the context of the movie, since I was already like shrugging and or rolling my eyes at everything, by the time that happened, I was like, oh, okay. So the first one comes out of like a mangina, and the second one comes out of a belly button, and the third one comes out of the back of the neck, and like they're moving up the head. Like, this is interesting. Like, okay, I wonder where we're going with this. Oh, it's the boyfriend. Oh, well, I guess closure for her. Well, okay. So a lot of the, if this movie had ran almost exactly the way it did and had wrapped up in what felt to me like a satisfying thing, I feel like I would have had a pretty good time with it. Because you can be slow and obtuse and weird if you ultimately have a point. You know, like House of the Devil is really, really slow, but it's fascinating because it, you know, like by the end of it, it's satisfying. And this is the anti-Snickers. It does not satisfy. So, also contains
the anti-Snickers.
Yeah. So for me, this is, it's still, man, the first time it would have been a one. I'll give it a 3.5 this time. Like, plenty of talent in front of and behind the camera, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I like this a lot. Apparently, I, in maybe more than one way, watched it wrong.
you watched it better.
I mean, I watched it in a way that made me enjoy it, which I guess is winning. So, yeah, for me, this is like a 7 out of 10. This was pretty cool and kind of stuck with me, and it gave me some shit to roll around in my head. And so, yeah, clearly your mileage may vary. Be warned.
I'm just.
And it's not even one where I can do the skin ring thing of like, give it 5 minutes, and if you don't like it, don't watch it.
Right.
But this one is like, you won't be able to tell whether this ending will piss you off until it's done.
Until you actually get to it.
Yeah.
Well, it makes me think of the thing of like, of the, when Matt was about to the thing with the, with Rory Kinnear, all the rules. Like, it made me think of like, you know, from now on, from time to time, I watch something on one of those streaming things, and nobody has a set rule about how they do subtitles. Oh, and so yeah, like sometimes you'll be watching, I'll put on something, I'll be like, oh, check this out or this out, whatever. And then get through the first several minutes of being like, well, clearly I'm not supposed to understand what they're saying. And then be like, yes, the fuck I am. They just didn't automatically start the damn subtitles. Like,
parentheses, speaking Spanish. And you're like, God,
yeah, you're like, what the son of a bitch. And so it's sort of like, so then I'm kind of like it into that of being like, oh, you just had a very different experience than what was laid out there. But yeah, I'm kind of up there with Matt. I mean, I'm going to say 6.5. Just as like, there's enough that I was interested in and committed to. I just would have wanted more scale. And more lunacy, and just more frantic fear. Not because she needed to be saved by some dude, you know, or like, you know, some kind of team up matchup-y thing. Yeah, like it's not like that. It's just not like that. But it's more just, I just think a level of just taking it out and swinging it in the wind would have, I think, probably brought up the pulse a little more. But as it stands, I think there's enough interesting stuff. And then that last sequence was just. There's a lot. So yeah, I mean, it's a bummer that Alex Garland seems to be committed to the idea of not making any more movies. It's kind of bums me out, but you know, this one's certainly a mixed bag for sure. But I would say 6.5 out of 10. 6.5 out of 10. Well, I had a thing and I forget the hell it was. I'll say 6.5 out of 10. 6.5 out of 10. Well, no, I got nothing. So I was going to say the many faces of Rory Kinnear. How about that?
There you go. 6.5 of them, might you say?
Yeah, like, yeah, because yeah, the one guy has a little bandit,
there you go.
A scarf on his face. Yeah.
Now, which is really, he should be using a K95, but
I know, right? Because everybody knows the little bandana ain't working for shit.
No, they don't stop fine particles. It's no good. Not for aerosols. Mm. Right, you can tell that it's probably a good idea if we just take a break and then come back with our stuff for next time.
That does remind me, though, Josh, though, super fast. That does remind me of my point of sanctimoniousness, that in the midst of the pandemic, when like when smug shitheads on social media would pose that composition picture of multiple people that were very clearly like lower income kind of people, that was like kind of one of those choose your fighter things, and like somebody had like a water bottle thing that they've kind of fashioned on their head, or they had like this thing or that thing, kind of like making fun of them, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and that was always a good litmus test for somebody I should just unfollow or not give a shit about anymore. Mm-hmm. Because like at a certain point, you know, if you have limited information, limited means, but you're just scared, like that doesn't mean you're somebody to make fun of. Like that's not somebody like fuck you. Like I laugh at plenty of shit, but that's just a different kind of a thing. And so I just like, I always remember that back. Like every time I saw that meme pop up, I'm like, oh, who's responsible? Like, to have a nice fucking life. Like, it's like, I know it might seem petty or kind of like small, but I was like, nope, good litmus test. Like, fuck right off and die. Like, what the hell with you? Later.
Well, yes, later is when I'm going to tell you what we're going to watch next week.
Oh, that's shit. True. Jeez, he's talented.
Coming up next week, we have, boy, do we have a potpourri. We have decided to watch Humane on Shudder, that just dropped, kind of dark comedy thing. We're going to be watching Rabbit Grannies, which is a Nazi kind of 80s, 90s thing. And we're going to be watching The Lighthouse, which is the black and white Robert Eggers, very bizarre thing. So Humane Rabbit Grannies and The Lighthouse is just, it's the Rabbit Grannies in the middle. It's like having a hamburger, only the middle with panel is like peyote. It's just like a live weevil. Yeah, on peyote.
Live weevil.
Live weevil on peyote is my Frank Zappa cover band. But anyway, Humane Rabbit Grannies and Lighthouse, won't you? And I've been Josh this entire time, and I say good night.
And next week's short, which I vetted. So here's hoping we like it more. I'm the Viper.
About the Viper.
So the short for next week will be called Dead Horse and will be available on the finer YouTubes everywhere, or you can easily just go to our website, horseshowhotdog.com, and it'll be in the show notes as per usual. And as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Dunn Austin. This is Charlie Dunn Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. If you get a second, watch a little bit of the Olympics. There's a lot of people just like you and me who are very, very pot kettle committed to these very strange activities, and it's kind of glorious and in a very humanistic kind of way, and I love it very much. So give you a chance to watch that. And if you don't get a chance to watch some of that, at least go watch some of the opening ceremonies, because you get to see some real lunacy there that's just pissed off all the Bible thumpers, which is even better. But otherwise, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. We'll be talking to you before you realize it. We'll be right there like, hi. And so, but for right now, bye.
Master of the Segway.
Stuck quick, some landings.
To the Segway.
Hi-oh.
The problem is that superhero would arrive very slowly because Segways are like running speed.